You're listening to The Brian and Gina Show, the official podcast of LA Magazine. Here are your hosts, Brian and Gina.
Hello and welcome to The Brian and Gina Show, the official podcast of Los Angeles Magazine. I am Brian Bishop.
I'm Gina Grad.
And what have we got coming to you? We're going to recap our out about around town. Also, a stirring, surprising, maybe review of Civil War, the new movie that hit theaters last week.
Very interested in this.
You have not seen it. I have.
Yeah. And so I'm very curious about it.
Yes, you will have more information than maybe you want or need.
Okay, fine.
But either way,
I'm interested because I'm intrigued. I don't know that much about it. I hope it's not art imitating life, But you'll tell us.
I have thoughts. I'll give it to you good. Straight.
Well, let's just jump in because there's a lot to get to.
I did ask Gary, put in the chat, yes or no. Have you seen the film? I assume not. You're a busy man with the child, but I may be the only one here on this show who's actually seen it.
Yeah,
Gary has not seen it. He would like.
I don't think a lot of our listeners have seen it. I don't think a lot of people have seen it yet.
I think you're right.
All right,
you're right. Where you're like, well, you're obviously right, but I think you know you have a common experience where you're like, I don't know a lot about this movie. Like they're not hammering you with information.
No.
And you know what I mean? Like this is, they're almost slow playing it. I think they're hoping for good word of mouth. We'll see how that goes.
I was just going to say that all I know about it is a few stray movie posters and word of mouth, which if you can sort of harness that is obviously the best.
Because I'm curious now what you've heard from, like, there's your friends obviously or whatever.
Well, and I haven't even heard from anyone who's seen it. I've heard from people who think they know what it's about and
we're aware of it. Okay.
Right. And so, but you know, when like you get super saturated and there's like just like constantly inundating you with a movie with different cuts that sometimes it looks romantic, sometimes it looks like action. And it's like, well, I kind of feel like I saw it. So now I'm good. So you overplayed your hand,
okay.
But this is the exact opposite.
This
and
is
I'm
not that
really intrigued,
as you should be. But
okay.
Let's start with the weekends,
please.
Oh, okay. Did you do anything of note?
Well, Friday was super fun. I got to go back on Good Day LA Plus,
which is nothing
on Fox LA now, as opposed to Channel 13. They had such a
they're airing out on like Channel 11 on the main mothership.
Yep, main feed right out of the gate, just after a month or two, which is so cool for them. I got to share the panel with Jen Lommers and Aroxia, and a surprise, my good buddy from a former life from KFI, Mr. Steve Gregory. I always thought everyone in radio knows everyone in radio. Turns out everyone in TV also knows everyone in radio because apparently Aroxia, who's a big giant, you know, anchor star, was Steve's intern before I was Steve's intern.
Oh, that's
back
funny.
A million years ago. Yeah.
I think Aroxia is the name of the planet they're on in Dune.
You might be right about that.
Yeah.
And I think it is familiar. Like the hottest name. Aroxia.
Wow.
It's pretty great.
I'm out of it.
It's like on Star Trek, there's a species called the Cardassians that I think precedes.
That true?
Yes. That's been around way longer than the Kardashians.
Wow, I'm not a Star Trek guy, so this is news to me.
Back when I used to date they don't like to be called Trekkies. They like to be called Trekkers.
Trekkers.
Yeah. I was like, did they just say Kardashian? He said they said Cardassian. Anyway, that was awesome to have Steve on. And I love a good fish out of water, a super uncomfortable dude, like hard news guy who does not want to be asked what his zodiac sign is. It's just the best for everyone.
Sure. How long were you on for how many segments?
From 11:30 to 12. The show's from 11 to 12, so I did the second half. And it was super fun. They threw a prompter at me again, which I've cracked the code on what makes two things that make prompter reading the easiest thing ever.
Please, because I've not crossed this Rubicon yet.
Well, neither of them have to do with the person reading it. It all has to do with the person installing the words.
Okay.
A, you can't go too big with the font. Just as big as the law of physics will allow. Mm-hmm. And then everyone's comfortable. And I don't know it must be hand cranked because I don't have to keep up with the prompter. The prompter will keep up with you. That was a game changer. So, you know, somebody starts talking about something and you're reading something and then it'll just go back for you, no problem. Or it'll speed up or it'll slow down. Whoever's running that thing, 1,000 thank yous, because it's so easy. It was awesome.
I'm glad. Thank God. It could have gone sideways very easily.
On live TV. I've done prompter not live. And it's like, okay, we're setting it at, you know, 84 beats per minute. I'm like, I don't know what's happening.
But is that too fast or too slow or both?
It was horribly fast. And if it's slow, you're fucked too. Because now you're vamping. So if there's a human being behind that, thank you. So that was super fun. Grabbed lunch. I think I told you this before. We grabbed lunch again afterwards, all of us over at the Gelson's. And you're like, okay, that's a grocery store. No. Again, the Gelson's with tables and menus.
This is the nice Gelson's.
Really nice Gelson's.
Well, nicer. Like, all Gelson's are nice.
Right. And this isn't just like the wine bar that you order at the bar. They come to your table and like bring you the thing from the grocery store. Although I'm sure it's cooked, you know, in-house. But anyway, that was super fun. Then turn immediately back into a pumpkin. Were you the one that said you hate when people say that because Cinderella was never a pumpkin or a carriage?
That sounds like something I would observe. And honestly, I'm on board. But no, I did not say that.
Okay. Somebody said that to me recently. And they said, stop saying you turned back into a pumpkin. Were you a horse carriage before then? And I was like, you know what I mean.
Gina, so, there are so many things that people say that hurt me deeply that I am staggered by on a daily basis that get in the way of my progress and my mental well-being, that this would be very far down the list.
Doesn't even crack the top 50.
Don't get me started on you got another thing coming. I cringe every time I hear it used wrong.
Interesting. We should get into this at some point because my husband and I are currently in a debate about what it means to say I'll be a monkey's uncle.
Oh, really?
I'm a monkey's uncle. Yeah.
All right. I mean, there's only one interpretation I'm familiar with.
What interpretation is that?
It means like you're making a monkey out of me. I'll be a fool. I'm taken by surprise.
Okay. You just said two different things and that's the debate. Well, if you're that, you know, if you think you're, you know, president of the United States, then I'm a monkey's uncle. Or, well, I'll be a monkey's uncle. This is a nice party.
I've heard the second one. The second one is it's revelatory. It's like, well, I'll be a monkey's uncle. Like,
right.
Like, wow, you really knocked me over with a feather.
Yeah. As opposed to, well, if you're that, then I'm a monkey's uncle.
No, so that's
we're
not,
debating
that,
those things.
That's more like the, well, if that's what you believe, then I got a bridge to sell you or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. Good. Okay. The grammatical one that I can't stand and I see it in writing all the time and to the point where everyone's just accepted it, that this is how we're supposed to say it. I don't know about you, but I would have done that.
No one does that who knows what they're doing. But
everyone writes it on Instagram. I don't know. I would have.
But these are dumb people.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Yes, it's would have, should have.
I would have. Anyway.
They're bastardizing the contraction, which is would have.
And a lot of people are, a lot of Americans, which is important because I think in other countries it flips. A lot of Americans now on Instagram putting dollar signs on the wrong side.
Really? I haven't
hate
seen that.
Okay.
No, so, thankfully I've not seen that.
Oh, you're a very lucky man. So I turned
that's how weak. That's how weak the dollar is. Thanks, Biden.
Well,
let's
anyway,
put the dollar back on the right side of the equation.
I turned back into a pumpkin, and we've had been busy dog sitting for 2 weeks.
Oh,
and
that's right.
This little
2 weeks.
Yeah, that's normal.
Are you getting
for us.
Paid?
No, paid in love and dander.
Yes.
But we finally, thank Christ, gave him back. He's a good boy, but dogs are a lot. And my friends now see that the reason I'm so good at it is because I do a lot of projecting my feelings. So they are catered to. They are not left alone very long. Mm-hmm. They are constantly being walked because I still
try to interrupt you. I still think about your reaction, your genuine reaction when I informed you that I replaced my dog's water every 2 or 3 days. It was like that. Yeah. You were genuinely horrified.
that is, I'm not saying I'll call the ASPCA. I'll just say I have concerns that have been noted. That shit is changed at least 3 times a day.
Oh my.
How hard is it to just pick it up and pour it out and put new water in?
For some of us, it's actually kind of hard, but also I don't want to.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Yeah. So I do a lot of projecting. I almost started crying when I had to leave because the way he looked at me, and I was on the phone with my mom and she was like, put your, I think she said big girl panties on, sure, which is sure. Very upsetting.
Yeah. I don't and want I your said, mother to say that to you.
No. So anyway, a lot of catering to this animal. So took him to the dog park for many hours after that.
Is this an old dog or a young dog?
He just turned 2.
No, it's a young dog. My dog's slowly circling the drain. I mean, not really. He's still doing okay for 15 and a half or whatever he is.
But wow.
Yeah, this is an old dog who sleeps all day. He's sleeping right now. So,
see, that's what I want.
I know he's the perfect lap dog. I've been emotionally bracing myself for his inevitable demise for the last 5 years. So yeah. I don't think I'm going to get there.
Yeah.
I think it'll be painful.
Yeah. It just will.
There's no doubt.
Nope.
Oh, remember how casual I was when my dad died? I came on the show like 2 hours later.
That brief pause of mine was debating whether or not to compare these things. And I'm glad you did instead of me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will be much more shook. Inconsolable.
I get it. Trust me. I get it. So yeah, I project way too many feelings onto these animals, especially when they're fluffy. I'm like real into the like fluffy guys and it just gets me. So it was whatever. It went back and I want to feel ashamed. And in many ways I am because I don't watch like reality shows. I've never seen Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
You're not missing much.
I've never seen Real Housewives, except for one season when my friend was on it in New York, but I didn't watch the whole season. That, how many years ago was that? I just said something. I'm not a Bachelor person, but...
Neither am I. But you know what's a decent thing. Show, footnotes all this, which I only know these shows because Christy watches them, my wife, and I'm forced to because there's one TV in our house. Traitors on, I believe, Peacock is actually a really good show. It's a competition show. It's not like reality, like follow these housewives and they have lunch all day. No, they're like, it's a competition show. They're all in a house. And it's, I think I did mention it because Alan Cumming, the actor, is the host.
Oh, I love him.
He puts the bar of what a reality show host should be so far out of reach. Like,
wow.
He's an actor and he's a great actor.
He's a celebrated Broadway superhero.
He's performing. He is sinking his teeth into this. Like, he's really leaning in to the campiness and the drama of it all. Like, he is half the reason to watch, maybe more. But he puts every other host who are, you know, varying degrees of okay to shame. Like, he's out there like playing a new game.
I've got to run, not walk to see this only because I had no idea Alan Cummings was involved. Yeah. Big Brother. These are not my shows. However, Love is Blind, man. That is a warm, fuzzy dumpster fire.
I can do some math, but based on the title, but explain that.
You'd be wrong. Between that and Love on the Spectrum, that's a good one too.
Oh, that's a great show. That's the British or Australian.
It's so wholesome. I thought it was Australian. They've done the American ones.
Yeah, I think it's Australian. It's fantastic.
It's so great. But Love is Blind is basically, they don't call it a reality show. It's a social experiment where all the boys live in one place and all the girls live in the other and they go on dates, but they can't see each other. They go into these pods. They schmooze each other. They're quote unquote dating for however long this goes on. I don't know how long you're there. 2 weeks, whatever.
Is there physical contact and they touch each other?
Nothing. There's just, you're in a pod and you hear their voice. And then you pick one and you propose to them.
Oh.
And then after the girl says yes, then the doors open for the big reveal and you run up to each other and you're either horrified or you're happy. Then you go on a little honeymoon and then you have to, you're supposed to wait. You plan the wedding. You get the dress. You pick your groomsmen and your bridesmaids and the whole thing. And then you wait till you get to the altar when they say, do you Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's funny, Gary. Gary obviously watches. He said, first, you describe yourself as looking like Megan Fox. That girl got raked over the coals for daring to compare herself. Okay. So, it was a generous compliment.
I see.
But yeah, and I get it. She was like, oh, dark hair, light eyes. But she got railroaded.
And then you wait. I don't like Jason Statham.
Exactly. Just because, yeah. Rock. Right. Yeah. And then you wait till you get to the pulpit or the altar just to be like, I can't do this. Or, then. So it's ridiculous. It's
great. Sounds great.
It's great. It's so dumb. So we watched and then you end up like Andy says how much it sucks and how stupid it is, but then he's kind of lingering in the living room.
Yeah.
And then like cut to like an hour later, he's fully seated and yelling at the TV.
You guys should give Traitors a chance. I think I feel like Alan Cumming is the acting bond that unites you and your husband. Like
amazing.
Your husband would probably attempt to do an impersonation. You would enjoy his campiness. Everyone wins.
I love that. I won't say who, but there's one person on this season of Love is Blind who just had a woman who had like a fairly like elongated chin. So every time she would come on, my husband would go, have you seen this? Have you heard about this? Yeah. So he'd do his Jay Leno impression. Sure, and sure. Then when things got really serious with the unlicensed ballad music, it like I'd be really into it. And then I just hear out of the side of my ear, have you seen this? Have you heard about this? I'm crying. I'm laughing so hard. This poor gal. So that was the big Friday.
That's
not a lot happened. Stepson had a soccer game. They did great.
Well, it was a rainy weekend here in LA. It rained pretty consistently.
And we got this soccer game in right as the drizzle started. So that was fine. Tied up Love is Blind. And then Sunday, several more hours at the GD dog park and worked on my statistics homework. Did you take statistics in college?
Thank God, no. Chrissy did, okay. And she still says to this day it's the only class that made her cry.
Okay. That tracks. I don't do math. And I was told to do statistics. This isn't the worst one, but this is the homework I'm currently working on. Can I read it to you?
Please. Is it a word problem?
Yeah.
Okay.
The average age of the population of licensed drivers in a county is 42.6, with a standard deviation of 12. Sure. And I had to figure that out because it's a symbol. And the distribution is approximately normal. A county police officer was interested in whether the average age of drivers receiving parking tickets differed from the age of the driving population. She obtained a sample of N equals 30 drivers receiving parking tickets. The average age of these drivers was M equals 40.7. That's the mean. Perform the appropriate hypothesis test to determine whether this group differs from the population of drivers in the county. First, what are the hypotheses in formal statistical notation? Second, draw the distribution rejection regions and critical values. Three, show where the test statistics fall on your distribution in part B. Almost done. This is one of the questions. Make your decision and communicate your results on the null hypothesis.
Yeah. Okay. I tuned out halfway through and I was thinking about Traitors.
Yeah.
Alan Cumming's killing it over there. My layman's approach would be, that's within the margin of error, 40 to 42, but what the hell do I know?
And you may be wrong.
I probably am. That's
statistics. No. So, yeah, it sucks. I hate it. And then Sunday, I did something so horrific. It's the only thing that kept me from saying yes to seeing Civil War Monday because of what I did Sunday night. Andy was at two basketball games.
I was sit-ups?
Worse.
Oh, God.
I was hanging out at home, and I finally decided to check out a movie I had no interest in seeing. I have no interest in the director.
Good. Push yourself. I have
no interest in the subject matter because I'm not one for... I'll never watch Boys Don't Cry. I'm not the one that has to be convinced that wrong. I can't do it. And I said, I've been a little curious, I guess, and I have nothing else to watch. I'm going to go ahead and tuck into Zone of Interest.
Oh, no. that's a hard recommend.
It sucks.
Yeah, it's tough.
I mean, I don't even say like it sucks, like it's a bad movie. It just sucks.
The viewing experience sucks. I don't think it's a bad movie. No. I don't ever want to sit through it again. I don't want to recommend it. But I think if you're a movie nerd, you got to see it because it's well made and it's interesting.
Based on a true story, but
I can't recommend that movie.
Yeah, and for anyone who didn't see it and doesn't know what I'm talking about, it's about this German Nazi soldier who lives with his family in this picturesque utopia home with the beautiful backyard and a stream and a creek. And, you know, kind of what happens in their life and just kind of I'm sorry. I forgot to mention over the fence is Auschwitz.
Yeah. Yeah. There's constant like smoke plumes and screams in the background.
Yeah. It's horrific.
It's tough. The woman, the wife, Sandra Haller, also starred in a very good movie last year that I would recommend to you, Anatomy of a Fall.
Oh. Is she super duper German or just learned German for the movie?
No, she's German.
Okay, because the whole movie's in German.
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
I would recommend that. That's a good one.
I didn't see it. But really kicking myself for watching that. Felt super bummed. Hated it.
It's not enjoyable. It's not fun.
And I get it. And I get, you know, and I kind of like the way they wrapped the ending up in a weird way with the sort of the time
the
jump
forward and everything.
Yeah. But, and it's a slow burn. Wait a second. Nope. It's a
small
movie takes a while to reveal itself.
That's right.
I don't know. I hate it.
I felt bad as soon as you said it. I'm like, oh, you're not going to enjoy that.
Didn't.
And literally the word enjoy, like some movies are to be enjoyed.
This is one of those movies you'd call important, which I try to always avoid important movies at all costs because there's just it's too much to be an important movie.
Yeah, it's funny because it's not as much important in theme as it is like it's expertly made. It's you know, there are certain things about it that are very clever and very good, but. As an overall movie, that's tough. I would not tell my mom to watch this.
No. The only thing that was interesting about it is when we talk about Holocaust movies like The Pianist and Schindler's List and all the classics.
Yeah.
Well, no, but also this is the other side of that coin.
Yeah.
You're really not interested in, not that you're not interested. The focus isn't the camps. The focus is this dude's picturesque life in his own beautiful backyard.
The fact that it dwells on the mundanity of day-to-day life of the SS is interesting, compelling. Yes. It's just there's no peaks or valleys.
No, and then I get super into it, and then the dog starts barking, and I get scared, and then I don't want to walk him because I'm afraid somebody's going to come snatch me up with my Star of David. And then I just think, like, how did this happen? And you think, well, I don't think there's anything particularly mentally docile or easily led about German people. I think this can happen anywhere. And you're like, oh God, it has happened other places, but they don't get the coverage. And oh God, what a world. And I hated it.
I don't know enough. I'm sure studies have been done and books have been written about, you know, maybe why Germany, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
I'm ignorant. I couldn't tell you.
Well, I don't know if I brought this up on this show, but not so much why Germany, but so much why the Jew. Mm. And this guy, I wish I had the audio ready. It's so interesting because even though going, you know, Hebrew school and dealing with all this stuff my entire life and, you know, studying it because it's part of like the curriculum of Hebrew school and stuff like that. Sure. Like, I feel like I know more than the average bear because I was forced to, but this guy put it so succinctly. That's the one. I was just talking about statistics, so I was
that's
afraid.
That's right.
Got
a lot of consonants flowing around in there.
So I'm probably gonna get this wrong, but the overarching theme of like, why does the Jew constantly get blamed and kicked out of, you know, where they go. And someone said to me directly on, I think, X or Twitter or whatever one time, well, there's got to be a reason they keep getting kicked out. I'm like, that was chilling. And there is. it's just not whatever, you know, incel reason he was thinking
sure,
of.
Sure, sure.
But it's just that, like, whatever a society in that moment deems the most repugnant, they graft onto the Jew. And this is his teaching. This was his, he was a historian. I thought it was interesting. Like, you talked about, obviously, like, I don't know if you've heard about a gentleman named Jesus.
Go on.
But it's like, you know, saying like the Jew who also, I'm not a big New Testament person, but didn't the Romans do it? But the Jews sold him out.
Yeah. I'm not either, but that's the extent of my knowledge. Yes.
Yeah. But like, may blood be upon the Jew and upon the Jew's children. So kind of started there. And then the Inquisition and what other examples did he give? Like when we find like, so for let's fast forward because he gave a million examples to Nazi Germany, that capitalism was the most repugnant thing in that society. So the capitalist Jew was the problem, the money hungry, the this, the that, and then takes us through all these different time places in time. And then he says, and today something that is extremely repugnant is colonialism. And out of all the countries in the world who have conquered other countries and colonized other countries, and this has been, I mean, there's a reason they say the sun never sets on the British Empire, but we're like, where's the Jew? Israel. I think a case could be made or not. I don't know. Either way, the Jew. And it's very eerie and it's very interesting, I think.
On a very special episode of the Brian and Gina Show.
Sorry, if I didn't watch, if I had turned off the TV after Love is Blind, we'd have a very different conversation right now. But I had to watch The Zone of Interest because I'm the worst.
Yeah, I didn't see Alan Cumming talking about this on Traders.
So funny, because he is, you know, he made his bones playing the MC in Cabaret on Broadway about Nazi Germany.
Ah, here we go. I didn't know that. I thought he was discovered in Romy and Michelle.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
Oh, how dare you?
Oh, I totally forgot about that. All right. Well, I would love a palate cleanser. Let's just take a second, a nice, refreshing sorbet. Let's put on our jewels. Let's get into a different frame of mind. Let me grab my Alex and Ani bangle is in the other room, but let's just pretend I put it on. Hey, everybody. What's up? It's Gina Grad. And when you're searching for the perfect piece of jewelry, it can be hard to find a brand you trust. Alex and Ani has been creating meaningful jewelry for over 20 years, designing pieces that connect you with all of life's important moments. With an emphasis on value, there is truly something for everyone. They've recently launched their Everyday Collection. I could not love it more. These pieces are made from stainless steel and an advanced water-resistant plating method that doesn't tarnish. It has the look of real gold. It's beautiful. I love these pieces because they feel so classic, but they have so much versatility. Alex and Ani are also featuring some gorgeous pieces that I have right here, like Black Lotus, this gorgeous Black Lotus charm necklace, and their Stay Wild pendant, and their Wings of Protection necklace that have a classic and vintage feel. See that? And of course, you can't forget their signature bangle bracelets, which I'm also wearing. And I have a lot of their stuff. I have the numerology bracelets. I have the hula dancer to commemorate a meaningful trip I took to Hawaii. From classic to bold statement pieces, Alex and Ani makes it easy to sprinkle your personality into each piece or make a truly meaningful gift for someone you care about. Meanwhile, you can take comfort in knowing that you're shopping with a socially conscious brand, as Alex and Ani has donated over $60 million to nonprofits worldwide, connecting fashion and philanthropy in an easy, fun, affordable way. Right now, Alex and Ani is offering our audience 20% off. So check their gorgeous collection out at alexandani.com and use the promo code MEIDAS. That's M-E-I-D-A-S at alexandani.com. Use that promo code at checkout for 20% off your order. Come and get something beautiful.
I'm Chelsea Ranieri, the host of The Zest, Orange Coast Magazine's official podcast, where I interview successful and notable people who have ties to Orange County. Listen to the stories of the lives and careers of guests such as iconic designer Paul Frank, Revolve's Risa Girona, and cooking show host Salma Dada. Subscribe right now to The Zest on YouTube and on all audio podcast platforms at The Zest.
Okay, you know what? I'm feeling a lot better now. I would love to hear about your weekend.
Yes, let's go in reverse order, because Saturday was Tessa, my seven-year-old daughter's first ever Little League game. She is the only girl on the team. The only girl in the game, as far as I can tell. There were two teams. There was Diamondbacks against the Blue Jays. She's on the Blue Jays. And perfect team for me. I have no thoughts on the Blue Jays. I have no energy towards the Blue Jays. Like, if she was on the Dodgers, sorry, I know this is an LA-centric show, but I would have a hard time rooting for her. I might root for the opponents.
You're a Bay Area guy.
And even the Diamondbacks are in, you know, I'm a Giants fan. They're the Giants division. I'd be gritting my teeth, you know, through that one. So, like, Blue Jays, great. Love it. Wear that jersey with pride, girl.
No thoughts either way about the Blue Jays.
I will say it was very, well, that was a lot that was very cute. First of all, like you alluded to, just got the game in before the rain started. Mm-hmm. We were afraid. We're like, oh, Tessa, I think your first game might be rained out. You know, on Friday night, we were saying this, and come Saturday, the rain stayed away just long enough to let the kids play, which is great.
Nice. Had she ever been to any practices? Does she know the rules of baseball?
Vaguely, I think they do. You know what? She told us. Here's how it works with our seven-year-olds. We try and explain things, and she cuts us off and say, I know, Dad, it's like blah, blah, blah. So I'm trying to, like, give her a rundown on the rules of baseball. Right. She goes, I know, Dad, it's just like kickball at school, like with the bat and a ball. I'm like, yeah, you're right.
She's not wrong.
Basically the same thing. So,
yeah.
She had a vague sense of how the game worked, having only had literally one practice before this game. I was nervous about her ability to catch and or throw, but both worked out fine. She actually made a nice play in the field. At 7 years old, when you make a nice play, it's basically getting your glove on the ball. You know, like not letting it roll past you.
Yeah, so yeah.
She did great.
Stop it. Yeah,
she was great. She, I will say, one of my core memories now as a dad is I happened to be standing next to Tessa. She was in the dugout. I was on the other side of the fence, but I was right there when the league commissioner is pretty ragtag, when they brought over the box of jerseys and they're like, which one do you want? And they pulled out the light blue Toronto Blue Jays number 6. Her face lit up. She could not be more excited to have had a jersey with her own number on it. She's like, yeah, that's a good one. I'll take that. That was very cute. She got up 3 times. She made contact, solid contact 1 time, drove in a couple of runs. It was, nice. I mean, thanks to overthrows and whatnot. I'm not going to worry about that. Point is,
minutia.
Point is, she shined in her first game. And of course, the highlight of the game for her was after the game when they gave out snacks.
Oh, yeah. That's why they show up.
Gatorade and Cheetos, two things she does not get at home. She was happy to dive into.
Worth it.
Totally. And it was nice. The parents were nice. There were even some, I assumed, aunts and uncles who came out to watch like some of the kids on the team. It was a nice little atmosphere. It was in the rich part of town, so we felt out of place. But it was nice.
Oh, go Blue Jays! That's
she has a jersey. It doesn't say Blue Jays. It says
We've had a couple of those.
But she was the only one. The nice thing about being the only girl, as far as I can tell, and maybe in league, is that her pink bat cannot be confused with anyone else's bat. There's a ton of black and blue whatever silver bats. Her pink
if hers
bat
is taken, it was on
out.
Purpose.
Oh, yeah. Her pink bat stands out. She got the pink cleats and the pink mitt. She couldn't be all selected by her, of course. Couldn't be more excited.
She is her mother's daughter.
Ah, she loves it.
That's great.
Yeah, it was cute. Good. It was cute. The rain stayed away and we enjoyed it. What ended up being a nice little midday baseball game.
Oh, perfect day for a game. That's great.
But before that, on the day before, on Friday, I did treat myself to seeing Civil War at the AMC in Century City, which features the Dolby Atmos Theater. That has the premium sound.
Ooh, and, oh boy. Is it,
if you're going
did it
to
blow
make,
your eardrums out?
I know some people love IMAX. It's good. It's really good. Yeah. I prefer Dolby or maybe the Prime Theater, which is also an AMC exclusive thing. Either way, see it in a PLF, a premium large format, either IMAX or Prime or Dolby, because this movie is a feast for the senses.
In what way?
Okay. I'll start in the middle. I'm not comparing these two movies. I will simply say this was the most intense theatrical sound experience I've ever had since I saw Transformers in 2007. Say what you will about Transformers, the sound on that movie was incredible, like seat rattling sound. And this is the first movie that has really challenged that experience.
Was it too much?
No, that's the thing. It wasn't. Okay, so let me start at the beginning. Civil War is the 2024 film. It's written and directed by Alex Garland. He did movies, I think you've seen Ex Machina.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, great movie. And also Annihilation. He also did Men, which I think you and I talked about briefly.
Yeah.
Did you see it?
He took a wide swing.
Yeah, I appreciate the ambition, but it was very... way too many, ironically, compared to, I'll get to that in a second. Everything was symbolic of something. Yeah. Everything was, you know, has a deeper meaning. And it's like, I just want to follow a good story.
Yeah.
But that was Men. This is Civil War, starring Kirsten Dunst, a young actress named Kaylee Spaney, Wagner Mora, Stephen McKinley Henderson, Jesse Plemons in what of is course. Really an uncredited cameo.
And, oh, wow.
Nick Offerman as it's uncredited cameo, but he's all over the trailer, Jesse Plemons. So I figure most people know he's, if you're familiar with the movie and the trailer, you know he's involved at least a little bit. And Nick Offerman plays the president of the United States. This is sitting at 83%.
Wow.
And I'll start with the press. I'll start with the overall oeuvre of this movie, which is, as you can imagine, the title of Civil War, the U.S. is at war with itself. There are a few different factions. The main character, our lens, no pun intended, is Kirsten Dunst and a couple of other war journalists who are making their way from, I think, maybe Atlanta, maybe Tennessee, somewhere around there to D.C. The reason being, the president has effectively barricaded himself in the White House. D.C. is inaccessible because he is, you learn later on, in his third or fourth term. This is sort of becoming a fascist situation. And the Western forces of California and Texas are making their way to D.C. to overthrow this illegal regime.
Oh, do we join together?
Texas and California have joined together.
Oh, look at us.
We learn later, this movie unfolds very artfully, very well. You find out later there's a Florida alliance made up of southern states. There's like a faithful, I don't know what they call it, like the faithful states, you know what I mean, of D.C. and frankly most of the Midwest and the North. And then there's like another faction. I'm sounding like I'm intentionally confusing because the movie... Alex Garland is a master, a filmmaker, right?
Yes.
He wrote and directed this movie, so he knows what he's doing. Every choice is deliberate in this movie. He very wisely, doesn't give too many details. The movie does not get mired in details. Number two, he doesn't make almost any parallels to today's political climate. I got a message on Twitter after I posted some thoughts on the movie. Someone's like, I thought about it, but I don't want to see a bunch of Biden this and Trump that. Well, I'm like, it is not that. You would be hard pressed. I guess they allude very in a single line to the great Antifa massacre that was happened years before. But again, this movie is in its own world, its own universe.
Yeah. Is this like suspended in a space and time not of our own?
it's hard. It's a little bit of both. It's this is an alternate reality, an alternate history, but this could very easily be our world. You know what I mean? Okay. Like he, again, very artful the way he under explains things intentionally. So you are really just following Kirsten Dunst and these other journalists as they make their way up to DC. Now, the movie kind of follows the tropes and patterns of a zombie movie or even like a post-apocalyptic, you know, dystopian movie. Like they're driving through highways littered with abandoned cars and there's no people anywhere. And they're driving through ghost towns, but then they'll also drive through a town at one point as though nothing has changed. This is Mayberry, you know what I mean? And like they're just going on living life as though nothing is going on. And then they'll go, you know, a series of vignettes. Well, there will stop. There's one scene where they stop, and there are these two snipers, like militiamen, you know what I mean? Dudes dressed in fatigues,
right?
Shooting at another sniper who's in a building. And they're like, who are you? Who is he? And they're like, we don't know who he is. All we know is he's shooting at us.
Wow.
And it's like, the movie is really about man's cruelty towards his fellow man and hardly at all about politics or the machinations of, you know, this leader versus that leader, whatever. It's a real theatrical experience. I mentioned the sound. Like I think I posted this. I don't know if you saw this or not. The third act of the movie, I'll simply say, the Western forces reach Washington, D.C., and there is a siege on the White House that goes on for 20 minutes. It's the third act of the movie. I have not white-knuckled a third act like that since Zero Dark Thirty.
Wow.
I'm a pretty even-keeled guy, as you know. I had walking anxiety for a good 30 minutes after this movie. Like walking in my car, I'm like looking for snipers. Like, you know, at Century City Mall, you know, this movie had me shook. It's an incredible experience. It's a masterpiece and it subverts expectations at almost every turn.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And now I thought to myself, after I got home from seeing the movie, I'm looking up, you know, information about it, whatever, doing my film ball research as it were. And I'm like, how did 70% of critics give this a bad review? This was incredible. And surprisingly, I expected maybe this would have been like a cause celeb of like, you know, certain right wing or left wing points of view. Like, oh, how dare they take cheap shots of blah, 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 or whatever. It wasn't that. The main criticism, as far as I can tell, is that the movie doesn't go hard enough in the crease against like the current political climate or how we could end up here or that kind of stuff. Didn't make enough parallels to our world. I disagree with that. I'm here to tell you that the movie does a smart thing by not getting mired in the details of what the president, for example, the Nick Offerman character, is on screen for maybe 3 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And honestly, it's closer to 2.5. He's on the radio a lot. He's this kind of omnipresent, you know, a specter, but he is not, you know, the movie isn't about him. Far from it. Wow.
Okay, please. I know you're very good and diligent at not giving things away. So please tread carefully when I say, because I love his movies. Ex Machina is one of my favorite movies. Annihilation, but Ex Machina and Men was fascinating. But does this movie have an actual ending?
Oh, yes.
Okay, now, that's all I need to know.
Oh, yeah. Now, you may find it satisfying, unsatisfying. What your mileage may vary, but this movie has a Shakespearean ending.
Okay, I'm back in.
Oh yeah,
and I'm glad that I thought it. You know, I was like, I don't want to, and I think a lot of people feel this way right now. Like, we don't want to upset the beehive, and like, I don't want, you know, for this to further fuel, you know, current anger, and it doesn't sound like it's about that at all. It sounds like it's quite a cautionary tale.
it's a cautionary tale, and it really is like when I said man's cruelty to his fellow man. Like, this is a movie about, like, that's almost an entire movie about side characters. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the character who is the character, let's face it, should be the president. He's a footnote to this whole thing, you know, or I don't know. He's a chapter heading, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's an important piece, but the movie's not about him.
No, I'm back in. I'm totally back in. I just needed to hear, you say it.
This is one of the best movies I've seen in years.
Wow.
Yeah, it was. I'm hope I'm not overselling it for people who are going to see it and be like, it wasn't that good.
It's all right.
Please listen and hear me. That this movie does not spoon feed you. It's not a war movie, right? Like, you're not going to get the thrill of war. Like, at certain points, there are shots fired, and you feel them in your soul, both metaphorically and physically. The sound will rattle you, but then it's also incredibly jarring.
I'm very, very interested in this.
It's a really good movie. I don't know what this year holds for film, but I can't see a scenario where this is not in my top five at the end of the year.
Wow. Well, and it's funny too when you said, I have some notes on your notes.
Oh, please.
When you said it doesn't get mired in the details, it reminds me, since we watched it again recently for, I don't know, probably seen it three or four times, which is a lot for me. But when you say it doesn't get mired in the details, I always think of Looper, where Bruce Willis are sitting at the diner. He's like, let's not worry about the details because we'll be here all day.
That's right. Yeah, smart. That's another great writer-director, Ryan Johnson. He's like, he knows what he's doing.
Yes.
He's like, get to the meat. Don't worry about cutting all the little bits of fat off the steak.
And like Looper, like, and sounds like Civil War, enough is explain that you're not like, you know what, I tap out, I don't even know what's going on. You know what's going on. But if you're like, well, how did the don't worry about it.
To that point, I loved the way the movie that drops in little hints about, like, either how he got here or what's going on in the outside world. Like, at one point, the journalists, the four of them, are in like a Chevy Suburban or something, heading north, right, towards DC. And they stop at some nowhere town, you know, to get gas. It was one gas station off the side of the highway. And long story short, she goes, "We need some gas. I have 300. And he lied. The guy who's holding a rifle laughs, and he's like, 300, 300 will get you a sandwich. And she's like, 300 Canadian. And he's like, all right.
Oh,
inflation has gotten so out of control thanks to the Civil War that, you know, Canadian money is like the, you know, it walks the walk.
Wow.
There's a lot. Yeah. There's a little bit of that, like the Antifa massacre that gets mentioned once. There's a few different moments where you're like, okay, like I never say this, but I'm going to say it. This could have been better or better served as like a 12-part series.
Oh,
because there's so much life outside of this movie.
That's so funny, because as you were talking about it, I was thinking, and I don't know how familiar you are with these series, so I was thinking like The Last of Us and Station 8, and was it Station 11? Anyway, I love that series.
Or even The Walking Dead, I imagine, has a little bit of this DNA.
Wait, did you see, do you know what I'm talking about? Station, it was amazing.
I feel like Station 11, but I don't know what the hell, what do I know?
Yeah, Station 11, fantastic. But it has that sort of dystopian, but not in like a Mad Max, like over the top way, just in like, we all know what happened. And
people are trying to get by.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I love that. Amazing. Great. Well, if I can just sort of tag onto that, when you say it's about man's inhumanity to man, that is exactly what The Twilight Zone is about.
Oh.
Like, that's what it's about. I said a couple shows back, that my 8-year-old stepson is super into The Twilight Zone. Now, it's funny when a kid is into The Twilight Zone because, and like, I was terrified of it. I couldn't even hear the music when I was a kid. But it's funny because you're riveted by like the jump scares or the scary faces and like all the stuff that a kid is supposed to be scared of. When you watch it as an adult, you are scared of a completely different plane of thought, thanks to Rod Serling. that's what these are. I mean, there are episodes that are like, we've watched so many of them, and some he's like, I didn't get it. I didn't think it was funny, or I didn't think it was scary. Yeah. But it was, he just doesn't know about the Cold War.
The context, you know, yeah.
Things like that, exactly. There's, God, I wrote down so many. Oh, the monsters
I'm only vaguely familiar with the Twilight Zone. I've seen few here and there, but I'm not a fan.
Fantastic.
I enjoy it. I'm just not, you know, into it.
Oh, we're back in it. Even, you know, when the kid isn't here so we can watch some of those episodes. But it's funny when my thought is like, Twilight Zone's like a cross between Stephen King and Black Mirror. Which is funny because they should also be saying thank you to the Twilight Zone, which I'm sure like Black Mirror has a million times.
Sure.
Which, you know, it just wasn't focused on technology because
there is no Black Mirror without Twilight Zone.
Exactly. Sure. But like a very famous episode, The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street is, and you know, there's always a twist at the end that you don't want to give away because it's fun to watch, but like how this town turns on each other to try and figure out who the alien is, who the bad guy is, until they just destroy themselves. And then there's a twist at the end that like none of them were, and it was when you said man's inhumanity to man, that is what this series is. And it's on one level it's like, oh, scary face, and on the other it's like, that was chilling and I can't stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
And it's timeless. The only one I will ruin for you, because I find it so fascinating on two levels. The pilot is amazing.
Oh,
the
really?
First episode of The Twilight Zone. It's called Where Is Everybody? You know, where a lot of things start, like, and there's this trope happens a lot in Twilight Zone where someone wakes up and they're like, where am I? Mm-hmm. But this guy's just walking down the street and he goes to this town and he seems normal and nobody's there and nobody's in the diner and the jukebox is on and there, you know, wants food and nobody's coming. And then he runs around and nobody's there and he's starting to lose his mind. Mm-hmm. And I am going to ruin this one for you because it's important why. But, he's such a great actor. I don't know who it is, but he's so good. And he finally can't take it anymore. And he starts pushing the crosswalk button, like, somebody please help me. Just like clinging to the pole, just pressing this button over and over again. And then it shoots to a bunch of like stern faced white men in military outfits through a window watching him. Uh-huh. And it cuts back to the main character and he's pushing the like, get me out of here button, but doesn't realize it. And the thing that makes it so interesting is this episode was filmed in like the late 50s, maybe early 60s. And what made it extra creepy for the people watching it at the time was they were testing how long a man could be isolated because they were gearing up for, are you ready for this? A pie in the sky, sci-fi, couldn't even make this up, trip to the moon.
Okay.
Which is funny because it was before we had been to the moon.
Yeah.
So like, it's just really interesting how it plays on, you know, and on our fears, on the thing, on the unknowable.
Yeah. And what was in the zeitgeist at the time, you know, the mission, a manned mission to the moon, et cetera, et cetera.
And yes. And it's funny because the whole point was, how long can a human being go without contact from another human? And he was losing his mind. And some of the things that were in edge, I mean, they're fascinating, but like, it's so funny because a little boy who was sitting next to me said, they didn't have AI or anything. I was like, you are right. So, you know, we hear all these crazy stories like out of like Tokyo, they're working on like AI girlfriends. Yeah, right. And, you know, it's just, it's a different world and it's so interesting. But beyond just like the technical, there's an episode called Number 12 Looks Just Like You. And it's where every person, when they reach, you know, 19 years old or whatever, picks a new perfect body and face and like, you're a number 12. Oh, you're a number 8. Good choice. And this one like normal looking teenager is like, I don't want to do this. Like, you don't want to be pretty? You don't want to be perfect? She's like, no, I want to be me. And what's the big, you know, what's so great about looking like everyone
revolutionary
else?
Thought.
All of these really incredible twists and things that we think about today that, again, I have to say, like, I'm sure Black Mirror, you know, owes a huge debt to Twilight Zone. So we've been watching tons. I'm just going to rattle off some titles.
Please.
These are the ones we've watched so far that you should look for. And I asked our listeners, and a lot of them agree. Where Is Everybody was the pilot, the one I was talking about. Living Doll is most people's favorite because I think it terrified them as a child. It's with Talking Tina. I'm Talking Tina, a little doll.
Familiar.
turns on her stepfather. And the monsters do on Maple Street. We've talked about that. The most unusual camera. My stepson loved that. It takes pictures of things that are about to happen.
Oh, yes.
That's a good one. The Invaders. Very, very popular when these teeny tiny little aliens and a little teeny tiny spacecraft find themselves in this like woman's barn house and how terrified she is of them. And it turns out that aliens To Serve Man, a classic. Again, I want to give all these away, but I won't. Oh, and Nightmare at 20,000 Feet is everyone's favorite.
Everyone knows that one.
That's the William Shatner with the gremlin on the wing, which is so great. It's the man in just the cheapest monkey costume that they like sort of painted the face, but not really. And it's hilarious, even though it was terrifying at the time. My stepson loved it. And then he announced to us a few days ago that he's no longer going on planes anymore.
That's fair. So I guess better safe than sorry.
It did stick with him. But the monkey outfit is they weren't there yet with the costumes.
It's funny because they repurposed that one or remade it for the movie. Yep.
John Lithgow.
That's right.
No smoking. N-M-S-O-K-I-N-G. That also traumatized me. And bad things happened during the filming of that. Yes.
Not in that segment, but yes, in the Vic Morrow segment. All right.
Yeah. So when we asked the audience, tons of votes for Talking Tina. Five Characters in Search of an Exit is a great one. It's like a ballerina and a clown and some other little guys that can't get out of a hole. And then you find out why, which is fun. And of course, It's a Good Life. The Billy Mumy wishing everyone to the cornfield.
That's right.
That's a classic. That was also in the 80s remake. Terrified
yes, it was.
Me when you saw the sister.
But
in mouth.
What, he was wishing people into the TV or am I in the movie? I'm mixing that up.
It might have been into the TV in the movie. In the original, they're in just a field where they can't get out.
Okay.
And he can't figure out. Talk about a cautionary tale for indulging your children. Why, like, no one else will play with him and why everyone's scared of him, but yet he doesn't like to get upset.
That's right. You've done a good thing, Billy.
That's right. So many. King Nine Will Not Return. I don't know that one. An Occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge. These are just people weighing in on their favorites.
Which is the one with Burgess Meredith and the glasses?
Oh.
Right? That's a classic. I've seen that.
Is that the one where all he wants is to sit?
So read books, be left alone.
Well, he gets half his wish.
Yeah, it's true.
Very sad. And yeah, some of them are sad. Some of them are kind of funny. Some of them are just eerie. And then Stop Over in a Quiet Town. Again, a lot of them are like, how did we get here? And what is this? Stuff that was really revolutionary at the time. But I have to say, like, if you're not too jaded, classics and still very eerie. So get back on board. They're on, what are we watching on Netflix or they're streaming? They're all streaming.
All right.
And they're great.
I'll throw it on the pile of TV shows I have not seen.
Please
and
do.
That is large.
Oh, I know. And I'm more of the TV person and I don't know that you look down upon. I'm projecting.
No.
But when you say, there's this particular movie and you're like, this is for people who go to the movies once a year.
Yeah.
That's me. Unless it's a kid's movie.
Civil War
all
could
in on
be that.
Movie. Huh?
Civil War could be that in the sense that if you're going to go once between, New Year's and the summer, this might be your choice.
Okay. Because we see all the Ghostbusters and all that stuff. But movies that you don't take a child to that doesn't come with a commemorative popcorn holder. We don't see a lot of those.
Resident Empire? The Ghostbusters?
Yes. We saw it opening night.
Oh, lucky you. Actually, I saw it opening day as well.
I liked it.
Oh, really?
Here's
like you like coming... like you like your kids' drawings.
I liked it like it wasn't animated, and I was able to like enjoy it and eat my popcorn. I wasn't watching it with a critical eye. I was there for the child who was very excited about it and got the Ghostbuster catcher trap.
Oh, the trap with popcorn?
On my dining room table still.
Nice.
So
I still use my Taylor Swift cup for my shakes. It's huge.
Yeah, Andy still has an old, Carl's Jr., like, super duper gulp, because that's what the cup he would use to give my stepson a bath when he was a baby.
Oh, nice.
it's like a gallon.
I have one from Gus's Fried Chicken in Memphis.
This is all happening. I have one that's normal sized from the cider mill right now.
There you go.
So I love a commemorative cup.
Yeah, we're going to have to cycle through this pretty soon. Maybe we'll have opportunities soon. But the time is coming to rid ourselves of some old cups.
Maybe we should do an old cup giveaway.
Yeah, that's right. Who wants my Gus's Fried Chicken cup? From the original, I should point out, there are other locations. We went to Mecca.
Oh, wow. Speaking of that, I don't know if you're familiar with Bojangles, but they're coming to California. Got to meet
Mr. Bojangles, but I don't know if I want
to. Bojangles is a southern fast food place that has and stuff.
Yeah, I think I've seen these.
Because now that What's Its Nose is out here, Raising Cane's, which...
Have you had Raising Cane's? I have not been. I'm aware of Raising Cane's. I have not been.
I think people like the sauce. I don't know.
All right.
I don't know. I'd stick with Popeyes.
Oh, really?
Popeyes or
Chick-fil-A? Or are we just apples and oranges here?
I do love that chicken from Popeyes.
I heard this.
Good. Are we done?
I think so. Okay. What are you hard men, Gary?
Raising Cane's.
Okay. I was going to say. We mentioned a few establishments.
It's a hard meh. It's fine. When there's lines around the block, I'm not understanding that.
No, thanks. All right, everyone, go see Civil War. Let me know what you think. Unless you didn't like it, in which case, keep your stupid opinion to yourself.
And go watch more Twilight Zone and let me know which one your favorite is. You can do both of those things at Bald Brian, at Gina Grad on Instagram, on Twitter, even on Facebook. Keep in touch with us because we do love to talk about you and all the things that you're doing.
If you want to see Tessa in her Little League Blue Jays uniform, is on my Instagram. So help yourself.
Help yourself. And also, please do us a favor. And wherever you're listening to this, just push the like button or the little 5-star button. That's it. You don't have to do anything else. If you have some hard critiques, go ahead and give those to us personally. If you have some super, super, super constructive compliments, post those publicly. It helps us a lot. And I guess we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Brian and Gina Show. To get in touch with the hosts or buy their books, hit them up at @BaldBrian and @GinaGrad on Twitter and Instagram, or by email at podcasts@lamag.com. To get connected with LA Magazine, hit them up at @LAMag on Twitter and Instagram. Talk soon.